Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, designing custom decks for outdoor relaxation and entertaining. Details at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio.
I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Congress is still out of session through the end of the month, but a lot of people are still processing some of their big decisions, including the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill and rescissions legislation that clawed back billions of dollars. For public broadcasters like myself, it was hard not to pay attention to the latter item, since the bill in question defunded the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It's a topic that's been on the mind of Congressman Mark Alford for a while, especially since the Cass County Republican spent several decades in commercial television before making the pivot to electoral politics. I spoke with Alford earlier this week by phone about why he supported doing away with public media funding. I asked him to explain why, as a former broadcaster, he thought it was the right move for the GOP-controlled Congress to pursue.
Well, Jason, thanks for that question. And look, this is not personal to you. I think you're a great journalist. You have always been fair to me, and every interview that I've heard you do, you are fair no matter who you're interviewing. This is about, in general, that taxpayer-funded journalism, I think, really should be over, especially when we're looking at $37 trillion of debt that's put on the backs of the American taxpayers. I have friends in PBS and NPR here in the Kansas City area as well. This is not a slam against them, but, you know, I competed basically for 35 years against taxpayer-funded stations through the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. We competed for eyeballs. I think it's time, with the number of media outlets that we have now that we did not have in the 1960s, we have 15,000 commercial AM and FM stations. We have, I think, 425 satellite radio channels. We have 4 million registered podcasts. There are about 500 million worldwide listeners to these. And I think the time has come, for NPR to fly on its own, for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting to compete with the rest of the commercial broadcast stations. We are not trying to kill Big Bird. We're just trying to get him out of the taxpayer's nest and get Bert and Ernie to move out of their parents' basement. It's time to grow up and compete with the big boys. You guys do a great job, and I'm sure that your great product could be readily sold, just like your competitors are doing.
And I want to acknowledge something here, because I think that we need to be honest about certain things. I think that there is an inherent tension in covering government when the government funds you. That's certainly the case right. For us for now, that we're part of the University of Missouri system and we're state employees. That will not be the case in the near future when we become independent. But I just wonder if Republicans are being consistent on this point, because I haven't heard a lot of people say that there shouldn't be public notices in newspapers, especially when those benefit very rural ones that depend on that type of income. I know radio and TV stations, even commercial ones, get some government funding for emergency broadcast-related equipment. And I've even read articles that Carrie Lake of Voice of America is bringing in things like OANN to Voice of America. They're not being paid for that, but that's still a massive in-kind benefit to that agency that other for-profit companies are getting. Is there a lack of consistency on this point that needs to be addressed before you really hone in on Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
I don't think it needs to happen before we hone in on that. I think it can be in conjunction with that, and I welcome the opportunity to take a closer look at these. I know Carrie Lake. I know how she's trying to reform Voice of America, which I think needs some corrective steps. As far as the emergency broadcast system goes, I mean, that is a matter of national security. That is a matter of safety. The alerts that come down through the EBS have been critical in saving lives. There are instances I know in St. Louis recently where maybe it didn't do what it was intended to do. But Look, I will give you this, Jason. I am willing to look at anything and all things. And as a member of the Appropriations Subcommittee that oversees the Federal Communications Commission and Brendan Carr, I am willing to have tough conversations with him as well and whoever it is to make sure that this is fair and that it is a deserving correction in America, journalism, information, and technology.
Do you have any concern that this could cause smaller rural NPR and PBS affiliates to go out of business? I'm more concerned about what happens in Cape Girardeau and Warrensburg and Maryville and Chillicothe. What about you?
Well, look, we regularly go to Warrensburg, the PBS station there. I think it's KMOS. Scott Fawn has a show on that. I've been on that show as well. They have a lot of help, of course, through their university. So the students who are working there are getting credit as well. I think they're paid some. But yeah, there's going to have to be a way, and I think there will be a way, to pick up funding through other measures. NPR will be around. PBS will be around. I think there's going to be some rebranding to that, but the programs that you guys produce are quality programs. I have no beef with the programs necessarily. I do think in general there has been a liberal slant to a lot of the coverage. In fact, even Juan Williams, who used to be with NPR, he called it an insulated cadre of people who think they're right, and they have a hard time with people who are different. I think, and this is a much larger discussion, Jason, I think you and I have talked about this before, maybe even off mic, about journalism in America and how we've got to, you know, it's not my job to rebuild trust in journalism. I'm out of that market. It's the people in the business that need to do it. And so I think while we're trying to rebuild trust in Congress, journalism certainly has its job to do, because information, accurate information with as little bias as possible, is paramount to the survival of a democracy in our republic.
During a KCUR town hall event, when you were asked about this topic, you said something to the effect that Sesame Street should be teaching the ABCs and they're teaching too much DEI. DEI, of course, stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Can you give me an example of that, of what you find objectionable about, like, what Sesame Street or other PBS children's programming is doing right now?
Well, look, I don't have a specific episode at my fingertips or something I can quote from that Big Bird has said or Bert and Ernie, but I do know this. The programs that were being funded to go into foreign countries, and here as well, teaching programs about diversity, equity, inclusion. And look, I don't have anything wrong against equality. The equity portion has always been an issue with me, in that equal outcomes are not guaranteed in America. And I think that if you go back and look at, there is a vast, vast difference of the Sesame Street shows when I was growing up in the 1970s and 80s than what is on the air now. And I think if any objective American who took an episode from 1985 and compared it to 2025, there is a stark difference.
Well, I actually am kind of an expert in this subject, because my son Brandon absolutely loves PBS Kids. He loves shows like Skillsville, Let's Go Luna, Carl the Collector, Arthur. So I have watched a lot of PBS children's programming in the last few years. And yeah, I think there are instances that I could see conservatives find objectionable, like when in Arthur, Mr. Ratburn, who's the teacher for Arthur, gets married to his partner, who is a man. And I guess I could see why that would be controversial, but I guess I would flip it around and say Donald Trump appointed a gay man to be Treasury Secretary, and he's made a lot of appointments of openly gay people to major positions. I think that saying that gay people exist, even in children's programming, I don't see that as controversial as it was in the 1970s or the 1980s. Do you?
Jason, do you honestly believe that the average American knows that Secretary Bessent or Richard Grenell are openly gay individuals serving in the administration?
I don't know the answer to that. And I know they don't spend all their time talking about their spouses who happen to be of the same sex. But I'm just making a point that, like, they are high profile public officials who are openly gay. And
that's because President Trump appointed them based on their merit, not because of their sexual orientation or to whom they're married. And that's what this administration and what conservative Republicans are about. It's about meritocracy and not about diversity, equity, inclusion. That's my entire point. That was my point on armed services when we were trying to get DEI programs out of the military. Thank God we finally did. Because our recruitment numbers were going through the floor. Fort Leonard Wood was freaking out that we were going to have to close the base if we didn't get more recruits in there. And thank God we've raised the recruitment, meeting our standards now. We have 5 new companies there this year. This, you raise a very interesting point, Jason. There is a difference between acceptance and affirmation. And I think what we've gotten to a point in our media is this quest for affirmation rather than acceptance. Scott Bessent and Richard Grenell, 2 fine Americans, I don't care who they're married to. I care about how they run the Treasury. And Ambassador Grenell, I know he's running the Kennedy Center and has other duties as well. But I don't really, you know, I don't really go through the cabinet and say, okay, well, who is Secretary Rollins married to? Who is RFK Jr. married to? I don't care. I care what they do for America. And I think that's how President Trump looks at it as well.
Well, RFK Jr. is married to Cheryl Hines, who was on... She was on Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David, a classic show that is arguably just as good, if not better, than Seinfeld, though that may be even more controversial than the last question I just mentioned. I want to move on to something that you are very familiar with, and that is the concept of having public town halls, where as a member of Congress, you face potentially hostile crowds who may not like what you're doing or what you're voting for in Congress. In fact, one of the members of Missouri's delegation, who represents all of St. Louis City and part of St. Louis County, Congressman Wesley Bell, encountered this head on this week when he faced a number of members out of a crowd at a town hall who were upset about his advocacy for Israel. This is a clip from that Tuesday event.
What AIPAC is can I please finish? I'm gonna tell these folks anyway, so you might as well let me talk. So here's the thing. There's this propaganda going around. And so what AIPAC is donors all across the country who decide to use the portal to donate to show that they support the American-Israeli, that they support the Israeli relationship. That's what they do.
That was Congressman Wesley Bell at an event in St. Louis, which was interrupted multiple times by people who were upset over the St. Louis County Democrats' position on Israel. Congressman, that may be eerily familiar to you because you have been doing town hall meetings since you got elected in 2022. You did a couple that actually got national coverage for being so hostile. Some Republican colleagues of yours have said, don't do town halls at all. You seem to be taking a different tack. Like, why do these things that your colleagues are saying don't do?
Jason, this is the basis of why I ran. I was a newscaster, a journalist, an anchor, a reporter for 35 years. I spent my lifetime listening to people. How can you go to Congress and in my case represent 774,047 individuals and not listen to what they have to say, even if they vehemently disagree with you. And so I am, I'm bucking up. I'm buckling up, and we are going to hit our town hall tour next week. 15 stops in 4 days. We do it every August during our in-district work period. We have had more than 110 public meetings in 2.5 years, and I will continue to do that. We've had to make some changes. We've had to beef up our security, unfortunately, because of that. Not that we've received any verifiable threats, but it is tense out there. There are people coming in from outside of our district. We had a meeting in March at a coffee shop in Belton in Cass County. And usually at these Mondays with Mark's events, we'll maybe have 15, 20 people. More than 200 people showed up and tried to shout me down. I had a very loud microphone. I do think, you know, I'm going to try to change my tone and tenor a little bit on this, because if I am truly going to listen, I need to listen. And if people want to shout and yell when I'm trying to answer, I'm just going to stop talking and let them until they're done. I'm going to say at the outset, I will be here for 1 hour, in some cases 1 hour and 30 minutes. And this is your time. And I'm here to listen to you and answer if you want to hear my answers. But I will leave after the time expires. And I'm not running away. I'm not leaving out of the back door. I'm here to listen to you. If you want to have a conversation, let's have it. If you want to yell and scream and shout and get it out of your system, I can stand there and take that. I'm a big boy. But if we are going to improve our democracy and our republic, we've got to start having conversations. We've got to listen. And we've got to exchange ideas and try to win each other over through argumentation and not emotion.
That was Congressman Mark Alford, who represents the 4th Congressional District that takes in portions of the Kansas City metro area, as well as Fort Leonard Wood. You can listen to my full interview with Alford, where we also discuss the Big Beautiful Bill and redistricting, at stlpr.org or wherever you get your politically speaking podcasts.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.